Blog Talk Radio. Everyone, this is May speaking to you live from New York. I mean, we're actually live, and it's kind of cold. We have a dusting, as they would say, a little layer of snow on the ground. I just don't like it. I don't know how it is down there with you, Cynthia.
Well, winter has finally arrived in Nashville. It is 13 degrees, and you need to keep in perspective that last week it was like 65 degrees here. So, yeah. It's a little nippy.
It's the wind chill, and that really does. I can't even go there, but
well, you know. So far though, winter has really, honestly, been very mild. So none of us can really complain. The problem down here, May, is it won't be cold enough. We need some snow to kill some of the bugs.
I know,
and that hasn't happened.
I do understand that one, because people don't understand when they there's certain bugs, especially mosquitoes and things like that, that when they're wintertime is when we can kill them off, and then, you know, then we don't get them back. But when you don't, they come back with a vengeance.
Oh yeah, down here it's ticks. I can hear them.
I know, and that too. We get
doing
that
a little
tip
tap dance all around me as we speak. But
I do not want to know. But
no,
this has been
to
Yeah, this has been a terrible week. I said on my Facebook and on my own, I just need to. I want this year to start over. I mean, I think one of the biggest shock to me was definitely when David Bowie left us last week. A week ago, and it just sort of like threw me for a loop, because I'm sitting here thinking, did I just hear something? Did I hear it right? So anyway, if anybody wants to go on, I wrote a little blog with about my time with David, in the sense of how John and I met him, and including Elton, and it was through Elizabeth Taylor. She did the introduction.
We're gonna get to that story, because we actually have. Also a guest joining us. She's a repeat. She's a fan favorite.
Yes.
Mojo contributing editor. She's an author. She's done biographies on a lot of music people, and she's also a singer-songwriter of her own and quite talented. But we're going to bring Sylvie on. She called in like a second before we went live on the air, so I want to make sure she's still there. Sylvie, are you still there?
I am there drinking a cup of PG chips, trying to wake up 3 hours behind you.
In fact, that's funny, because I'm drinking my PG chips right now.
Yeah, let's get sponsorship.
What is that?
We'll get a vacation in the Bahamas from it.
Well, the PG chips is a brand of tea from England, and it's really, well, I like it. That's one of my favorites.
I bet David Bowie wrote all of his best songs on it.
See, there you go.
Well, now listen, girls. You girls both, I'm going to grill both of you, because you certainly have way more connection to all of this than I do. But I have to say, this is my observation. You couldn't get more different than a man like David Bowie. I mean, he celebrated his differences. He did not recognize any kind of boundary or limitation. And I did not see one post in any social media that denigrated him, that made fun of him or talked badly of him. And what a tribute to a man who truly did make it okay to be different.
I know, he fought hard with that one. He fought a long time. I mean, you know, every time you turn around, he's got something else. No eyebrows, orange hair. He went from Ziggy to straight-looking crooner look. You know, it was And then, you know, and then he went into acting, and he was brilliant. He definitely was.
Mm-hmm.
Sylvie,
absolutely,
I know you have
agree.
I mean, I don't even know what to say, because I was watching a little bit of Saturday Night Live the other night, and they you know, they did a tribute to him, and they said go on the SNL site and you'll see the other appearances because he'd been on it so many times. And I forgot that he invited me to one of them, and it was the one where he looks like Ziggy, and that's when I saw him when he met Klaus Nomi was also one of the people, one of the performance artists.
Oh,
in
another
that, in
interesting guy, wow. Oh,
yes, I know. So, you know, so I've been to a few of his various, you know, things that, you know, and his changes. So it's kind of an interesting thing. I'm right up to the point where he was just an ordinary guy, where he's sitting in the recording studio with my kids when they were both young. And there's my son who's playing video games and wouldn't engage with David. And David's trying every which way. I took photos of this. And then there's Laura's all, oh, my God. And she's like a little girl guy. Oh, my God, it's David Bowie. And she's all of like 5 or 6 or something like that at that moment. And it was quite funny to see that. And at the studio, it was even better when I said, well, I'm hungry. I'm going to get something. He said to me, what are you ordering? And I said, I'm going to go for the all full English breakfast. I love that. You know, bacon, eggs, you know, the chips, the whole thing. He goes, and he looked at me and he goes, yeah, I want that too. And that's what I used to do. Well, it's the same thing what I used to do for John on weekends on a Sunday. And that was his treat. And then I just recently read that for a while David was doing the same thing, Sunday, the English breakfast. Although everybody started changing their diet, but that's basically we were all doing that.
Sylvie, did you ever have an opportunity to interview him?
Yes, I did a couple of times, and I kind of met him actually quite early on in his career. By complete chance, I was at a nightclub where he was playing, and we talked a little bit there too. I certainly didn't know him well. He wasn't one of those artists like that every year I'd seem to, you know, be dragged out to say hello and have an interview. But, you know, he was so amazing how he was. I mean, he's such a kind of gracious man, very, very erudite. Very British and polite, you know. I actually heard this very interesting story from a rock critic friend of mine, and she said that she had gone back to his hotel room with another rock critic, a male rock critic, after a show, and there was almost a sort of orgy going on in there, but there was David Bowie fully dressed in the corner, being the perfect host. And that seems to so sum him up, you know, this kind of real British gentleman. But at the same time, this guy who had this audacity, I mean, musical audacity, always outside the box, confounding expectations and nailing it. But doing it also from this position of kind of politeness in that English way and a certain kind of vulnerability, you know?
Yes, I agree.
And you know what, Sylvie, I almost think that maybe that's why people did not fight his difference, because he didn't slap you in the face with it. He didn't punch you in the head with it. He just was very gracious. And he looked like if you met him someplace, you could have a really pretty conversation with him. There would be no vulgarity. There would be no, he would be kind. And maybe his kindness is what softened his difference.
And also his absolute fascination with and study of art. I mean,
he wrote
the most brilliant songs, let's face it. Funny enough, I was playing one song. I was only allowed one. I don't blame them. I have my ukulele after all. But it was one song, Rock and Roll Suicide, and I was playing at this tribute concert locally in San Francisco to Bowie. And all of the songs that were sort of, you know, kind of one after another came out, and people were just punching the air in glory, and the crowds are all these kind of sad and strange and different words, you know. But he really is, you know, what can I say? It's Bowie. I was in tears most of the week myself, trust me.
Yeah. You know, when you think, I mean, meeting him under the circumstances of, you know, with Elizabeth Taylor, you know, so you.
Yeah, tell that story,
May.
Do that story, because it's so crazy.
I mean, it's true. We were at, we had heard that Dean Martin's son, Ricky Martin, was having his birthday. And we heard that Elizabeth Taylor was going to be there. And John's going, oh, my God, I want to meet Elizabeth Taylor. And Ringo was there, too. And Ringo says, well, you guys go ahead. And, you know, because I've met, you know, Liz. You know, I've met Liz. And so, so I said, okay, you know. So John and myself and Elton and Kiki D, and you know, we all decided we're going. So we ran ahead and we walked through the door, and there's the Beach Boys, all of them, and Henry Mancini and Dino, Desi, and Billy, and you know, and I talked to Billy Hinshie from Dino, Desi, and Billy. We've had him on our show, and we talk about that night, and the rest of the Dean Martin kids, and who else was there, and we walked in, and lo and behold, there sitting there is Elizabeth Taylor. I mean, yeah, in all her glory, and you know, you look at her eyes, this beautiful purple, you know, violet eyes that she has, you know, and that she had, and it was just beautiful. And I got to see those jewels, the emeralds and diamonds up close. Yeah, I saw up close. And you know, we were talking for a little bit, and then all of a sudden, I see this guy coming towards us, and I look up and I went, oh my goodness, it's David Bowie, you know, and I'm whispering on there, and John heard me, and he comes over, and he leans over to, he goes, Liz, darling, you know, and all this talking, and he goes, oh, and then she looked over at us, and she goes, oh, do you know David? You know,
aww.
So she did the introduction, and then and we talked for a minute, and then we said, we said to David, I gave him our number. John and I, you know, said, if you're ever in New York, give us a call. You know, here's our number. So I gave it to him, and Elizabeth said, oh, great. You know, I'm glad. And then she looks at David. She goes, oh, you're leaving. She goes, she turns around. It's all this Brit, you know, all the Brits. You know, mm-hmm. They turn around. They said, well, excuse me, I'm just going to go and see David off, whatever it was. And she walked off with David. But of course, they didn't really leave too quickly. They were somewhere else. So it was great, and you know, it's one of those memories that there's a lot of things that have happened in my life, and still to this day, I still think, oh, I forgot I was there. You know, it just comes back, and other people would say, how could you forget? It's easy when every day being with John was like this. You know, it, something has to stand out for me to remember because it was an everyday thing.
Of course.
Yeah, and you know, and believe me, that David was also was equally excited to meet John, although he was afraid to even say it. So his appearance sometimes came off aloof. You know, we had a great time in New York, and we also went over to visit him when Paul and Linda came over as well. So we went over to visit David at his hotel. So you imagine Paul, Linda, John, and myself.
Sophie, were you surprised at the world reaction? I mean, everybody, it was for days, just people just kept pouring out their hurt about his loss.
I wasn't surprised in a way. I don't know why, maybe because I felt the same way, you know. And it followed up on a death of another British musician who was much loved in Britain, Lemmy from Motorhead. And
right.
It was only a few days after this that suddenly David Bowie, whose news item was right at the top of the BBC broadcast as opposed to Lemmy's right at the end of it. There really was a sense of shock, especially as he'd, you know, just done a new album. Mojo magazine had just put him on the cover, the issue before last, saying the comeback of Bowie, you know. And unfortunately, this happens. So I think that people did identify with him. Certainly people of the baby boomer generation had him as a sort of, was always there in the same way the Beatles seemed to be, at least for part of our lives, always there, you know. Huge shock when John went, of course, terrible, terrible, terrible shock. And I think Bowie, it was one of those things that people just sort of rallied behind. Maybe they were also sort of, you know, some of the older generation, perhaps, you know, or the not young generation, lamenting the state of the music business now. And here was when somebody actually really did make it matter, who turned the lights on in a way in Britain with what he was doing in the same way that the Beatles did. Doesn't
right.
happen anymore.
No, and it was, you know, I'm glad that we got to witness this. And I'm glad that, you know, got to be up close and personal in what went on, you know, when I see the stuff that has gone on now, you know, and it's amazing what he has done, and you know, for the creativity that was out there, and he knew no limits. He just kept going. I mean, you would say, oh no, that was crazy. I mean, I remember seeing him before I met him. I mean, Ziggy Stardust coming down in Radio City in that, like in a half moon coming down the down out of the ceiling, and I'm going, wow, okay, this is interesting.
Well, that's why when like that younger people, I like with Lady Gaga, they're like, oh my God, and I'm like, what? You never saw David Bowie? Come on. I mean, you know, he perfected this. You know, I guess I don't know. So, Sylvie, did he ever express to you that he was surprised at his popularity or his success?
Not at all. I think he was sort of in some sort of strange ways, a lot of the time at least, in his own little world of work. He really was a creative artist and really wanted to keep on top of what was happening. I heard from another friend who knew him that he actually hired somebody to kind of go through the newspapers and the magazines just to see what they thought, what the zeitgeist was doing, just pretty much so they could be ahead of it, I think, rather than catch up with it. He had no time himself because back then, of course, he was always on tour, always creating. But as I say, he was always learning something new, and even before he, you know, we saw him as a musician in the beginning, he was, you know, going for lessons with Lindsay Kemp, who was this famous choreographer and dancer in England, and learning dance and learning mime. Also learning from crooners, you know, the kind of almost like the Bing Crosbys of England, people like Anthony Newley, musical theatre, everything, all of these were part of the palette. He wasn't just doing rock and roll or blues like most of the bands were at that time.
Absolutely, because, you know, my ex-husband, Tony Visconti, was his producer.
That's right.
You know, was his producer in the beginning and all the way in the last few years as well, in the last album. And you know, and it was amazing because they used to speak very, very strangely. Because Tony, they love art, they loved different things, and you know, David would say, oh, you know, you get that feeling. It's like Bauhaus. You know, I love that feel. Now, not many record producers would understand that, and you know, Tony would say, yes, I get that. And they would do the famous trilogy album in Berlin when it was at the height when the wall was still up, and you know, and they would talk about it in that ethereal, you know, out there German. That was one of his favorite, like the German impressionists and his whole. Because I remember going to the Guggenheim Museum with David once, and I remember that's what he wanted to see, and so that's how he would speak, you know, in the recording. And so it's kind of an interesting situation, because I don't think anybody nowadays in the record business, when they're doing, would say, oh, can you hear it? It's like that painting that, you know, of whoever. And yeah, it made me laugh, and I said, yeah. Nowadays it's, put up the faders. I want it all the way up. I want the big sound.
Well, first of all, it just cracks me up. To hear you say you hung out with David Bowie at the Guggenheim. Like, I'm trying to wrap my head just around that, okay? But also, too, I love, Sophie, that you say he had a palate. And that just goes to his whole 360-degree artist. He lived it, breathed it, and celebrated it. And didn't really do it, I don't think, for acceptance or reaction more than just that it was his expression. I mean, that's the observation I make, and you both know I'm no music girl, so I'm just looking at it as what I know of David Bowie. I never saw him in concert. My bad.
You would have been surprised.
You know?
I think you might. I don't know if you would have liked it, Cynthia, because you didn't like music that much, and you might have thought back in the day. I hate to say it, but you might have thought that this guy is weird. I don't know about it, and you know, but he definitely put a new spin on things, and when you look back you go, my God, he was so ahead of his time on these things, you know. And but he did talk, he loved art. I mean, I remember in his apartment he had this giant size canvas and you know, a palette that you know, you just stand there and you just would draw. And I mean, you know, when you see it, and it was constant.
Mm-hmm. I think so, you know. But, he also did go along with the rock and roll game, so it was sex and drugs and German expressionism, you know. It was a kind of very interesting mix. So I think he loved the decadence of it. He loved to be able to kind of play out his various games and you know, his fantasies and his life, in this wonderful kind of open artistic area. And I think another reason for the absolute outpouring after his death was a lot of people who felt themselves to be outsiders, you know, people from the gay community when it was illegal, mm-hmm. and, you know, an imprisonable offense to be gay, people who just loved the idea of playing with the idea of one's own sexuality, people who just felt that they weren't. I mean, in the song, the one I was covering on my, can you imagine? Rock and Roll Suicide, there's that big rousing, you're not alone at the end, you know, where you just think, oh, how lovely, I'm not alone. And how many of us have not felt that sometimes, you know, when we were, especially when we were kids, or actually even worse when you get older. But, you know, you're not alone. Here's this guy, you know, telling you it's okay.
True, absolutely.
It really, he really made performance art. I mean, he really did. And I guess the fact that you'd look at him and say, is he, isn't he? He didn't care. He was to you whatever you figured you wanted him to be. And that's the
right.
beauty of it.
Oh, what
it,
you needed
you know?
Him to be, yeah.
That's yeah. it. And he, you know, he didn't. You didn't have to know anymore, and you know it's great because it came to my birthday party one year. You know what my party is like? It's like hundreds of people, and I was living in an apartment in the city, and it was a one bedroom, and I think I had 80 people in that one bedroom, you know, that one bedroom apartment. And anyway, it was going on, and all of a sudden I heard whispers, and it was just jam packed, and I heard somebody saying, "Poe's here." I said, "What?" And I turned around, and it was like the parting of the Red Sea in my apartment. Meanwhile, you know, it was just so jam-packed, you couldn't move, and all of a sudden, here was this guy. He walks in, and the place just moved over to the side, and he came in to wish me happy birthday. He was a gentleman. He was great. I'm so glad I got to know him, and I'm, you know, even more so, I'm so glad that he had found happiness with Iman. And he had he has two kids, you know, one Duncan Jones, who's of course with Angie Bowie, and Lexi, who's with, you know, with Iman. It's just great.
Mm-hmm.
It's wonderful. And you know, he lived a very quiet life. He took his daughter out, you know, to school every day, and you know, he walked things that nobody would thought they would, you know, he'd be doing. But he loved it, and reading the interviews, and he just loved all that.
Mm. Yeah.
So it's the other side of him. And I went to see Lazarus, I think, on the opening night, you know, the previews of that. And I went on the opening night. It was a very interesting. It was all based on that, you know, Man Who Fell to Earth.
Mm-hmm.
And it was wonderful. Michael C. Hall from, I guess, Dexter was one of the leads. And it was, and then I know that David went like a week or so later, a couple of weeks later to see it. But I went opening night. It was the most, trying to get tickets was very difficult.
I can imagine it would be. But isn't it interesting that in the end that he must have known that he didn't have
yes.
long left to live, and he turned everything around again. We know what happened to, you know, Major Tom. We know what happened to the spaceman. You know, he was telling us in the last album, you know, it's up there now. And, you know, it was amazing how he turned almost his life at the end into a final performance.
I think yep. he was, from what I understand from Tony in his interviews, that he thought he had a little bit longer. And I guess just a little bit, you know, a little longer than where it was. So it was even though he knew, I think the shock of it coming
mm-hmm.
that quickly, you know, I think it hit everyone that did know. So it
yeah.
was, but he left us with a lot of great music, and great performances, a lot of great of everything, you know.
And he took his bow the way he wanted to. He took his bow the way he wanted to, and now the encores will go on forever for him because you can't deny the stamp that he made on art and music and just on human beings in general. I, like I said, guys, I tried to find a hater, you know, somebody who said, oh, Bowie's a weirdo. Couldn't find it. So...
Right.
I mean, I think that is a testimony to the respect that he garnered for his differences, you know, across the globe, really. I mean, I suppose there's probably somebody someplace who, you know, wanted to but just didn't dare.
Yeah, there is a way.
Yeah, I think he'd be, yeah, I agree.
But it's interesting.
Anyway.
Did you see the? I don't know if either of you looked in the Guardian newspaper online this morning, but there's going to be a constellation now named after Ziggy, after Bowie. Apparently, all the stars
so cool.
in it are going to almost make the lightning shape, you know, of the Ziggy makeup. So that made me grin this morning when I looked at that.
That's
cool.
Really
cool.
And hopefully,
that's
he's
great.
Flying around there someplace, you know, continuing to make Stardust and magic. And
yeah.
Sylvie, we really appreciate your getting up at the crack of dawn and coming on with us to, you know, lend us a professional perspective, and May with her personal stories, and me just, you know, sitting back at the two of you and saying, wow, I mean, you actually met the man, and it's just extraordinary. His life, his legacy, wow.
Oh, thank you for coming on. Definitely.
Thank you so much. So I get to go back to sleep now.
All right, guys. So,
hey,
I'm a rock and
roll. Like I did. Back to the PG tips. That's it.
Okay,
see
you soon, guys.
You.
See you soon, ladies. Bye.
Okay, bye.
Take care, Sylvie. Bye-bye. Oh, gosh, I love her.
She's great.
She's really getting a lot of attention for her ukulele music. I mean,
I'm glad.
It's like a really big attention. So we got to have her back on to bring us up to date, you know, on her.
Yes.
When we're not doing
absolutely.
Our Bowie thing. But,
yeah.
So hey, before we go off the air, tell us about vinyl.
I know. I made, I ended up going to the premiere of the new HBO series, Vinyl. And it was fantastic. I mean, Martin Scorsese, and I went with Roger Friedman. Thank you, Roger, who's a entertainment journalist. And he didn't realize I wasn't invited. And so he goes, no, you got to come. This is there because the fact is there is a character that's playing me. So it's kind
did
of
you
an interesting.
Did you get to see her? Did you get
no,
to check this
did not
out
see
that
her.
Was she playing you? No.
No, did
okay.
not. But it was funny when I was introduced to Bobby Cannavale, who's the lead, and when I was introduced, and he says, "Oh, this is May Pang." They go, "May Pang," and he just stopped and he went, "Oh my God, you're in my show." And it was kind of funny to hear that, but it was great. I was introduced to Martin Scorsese, and you know he made this pilot, and I mean even Mick Jagger was there. Everybody, I mean all these different people. But here is I'm sitting there watching this pilot, which is about almost 2 hours, and I'm thinking, is this a movie? This it felt like a movie, not a TV show. And it set the stage. What it is that it's about the 70s, where the record business in the 70s, and a lot of the people that they had in there that were playing different characters, we were picking them out. We could see who's who and who they were based on. But the events were real, because the opening event is about the Mercer Arts Center and how it collapsed. And when you go online, it actually happened. So when you read all,
okay, so some real people are in it, but it's really not real. I mean, I'm confused.
Let's put it this way: the characters,
it's
like
based,
they had a person playing Robert Plant. They had a person playing Peter Grant. You know, and that and they're you know in there. And then they have these other punk rockers that you know who they are, but the events. The events, and they name real people that were artists at that time, so you'll hear all of that. It's mixed in with fictitious people, and the fictitious people.
Is there
people
music
are based
in it, May? I mean,
oh,
do they
yes,
play
absolutely.
Songs? Okay,
absolutely,
yeah.
And you'll recognize a lot of the songs. They were real from back then, and it's amazing. It was just amazing because they mixed in with the fictitious people that are playing the parts are composite of based on people you know that were in this business. Yeah, that was in the record business.
A little
at
bird
that time.
Told me you walked the red carpet.
I walked the red carpet. You know, Roger said she should be on it. They're making a character for her, so they put me on, and I was not expecting to do that. Next thing you know, I'm the only one with the coat, the handbag. I'm like going somewhere. Everybody else is glamorous, but it was a lot of fun. I mean, it was Dennis Quaid and Meg Ryan. I saw Meg Ryan, and it was their son who's in it as well. And there's Ray Romano. He's in it.
And
the writer Terrence Winter, I met him, and you know he wrote for The Sopranos, so I saw Maureen Van Zandt and a lot of the people, a lot of the actors that came from The Sopranos, I saw some of them were in there as well. David Johansen from, of course, from, you know, the New York Dolls, and John Sykes from MTV. We were all there was a lot of record people in the audience as well to see this, and it really it's very authentic. I mean, it's kind of funny that one person said, "I'm not sure," you know, because that she was born in like 1988. didn't understand certain references, but I'm saying the baby boomers will understand this, and it's brilliant. It's just brilliant. I mean, Scorsese did a great job, and of course the music, the executive producer overseeing music is obviously Mick. He's also, you know, there's nothing more I could say about it except that it was so under wraps. Everybody, you don't know what's going to happen next. It was just amazing how it was shot, and it's all done in New York, and it's just great. It's just, there's nothing I can say. HBO did it. I met a lot of those people. Kudos to them. They did a great job.
We're seriously out of time, but
yes.
Let's Skype in a minute, Chicklet. I want to hear what else is going on. All right.
Okay.
So we're going to say Ta. That was Miss May Tang of Vinyl fame, and I'm Cynthia Nielsen, and you've been listening to Dinner Specials on Blog Talk Radio. Have a great week, everybody.